The Personal History of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens.
In language old ecstasy imparts the power they feel so well. There may perhaps in such a scene some recollection be.
Part 4. The Question of My Future.
Of days that heaven's happy been, and you'll remember me.
And now I am, in my own estimation, a man, and I have left school. It is time for me to decide what calling I should choose, but between us, my aunt, Mr. Dick, and I have not yet come to a decision.
I tell you what, Trot, my dear, as this knotty point is still undecided, I think we'd better take a little breathing time. A change, a glimpse of life outdoors might help you to know your own mind. Why don't you go down into that old part of the country again and see that out-of-the-way woman with the savage name?
Peggotty.
Ah.
Aunt, of all the things in the world, I should like that the best.
That's lucky, for I should like it too. It's natural and rational that you should like it, and I'm confident that whatever you do will be natural and rational.
I hope so.
Your sister, Betsy Trotwood, would have been as natural and rational a girl as ever breathed. You will be worthy of her, won't you?
I hope I'll be worthy of you, Aunt.
Oh, it's a mercy that poor, dear baby of a mother of yours didn't live. She'd have been so vain of her boy by this time that her soft little head would have been completely turned. Bless me, Mr. Dick, how he reminds me of her.
Oh, does he indeed?
And he's very like David, too.
He's very like David.
But what I want you to be, Trotwood, is firm. I want you to be a firm, fine fellow with a will of your own, with character and determination.
I hope I can be that, Aunt.
In order that you can begin in a small way to be self-reliant, I'm going to send you on your trip alone.
Oh.
I thought once of Mr. Dix going with you, but on second thoughts, oh, I shall keep him to take care of me. Besides, there's the memorial.
Oh, certainly. I intend to get that done immediately. It really must be done immediately. And then it'll go in, you know. And then there'll be a pretty kettle of fish.
My aunt recommended that I stay a few days in London on my way down to Suffolk. But otherwise, I was at liberty to do what I would for 3 weeks or a month, provided that I wrote to her and faithfully reported my progress. She fitted me out with a handsome purse of money and a portmanteau, and tenderly kissed me goodbye a great many times. My first call was in Canterbury to say goodbye to Agnes and her father. My sweet sister, as I called her in my thoughts, was a young woman now.
I'm very glad to see you, Trotwood. The house hasn't been itself since you left.
I'm not myself when I'm away. When I miss you, I miss my right hand. Everyone who knows you is guided by you, Agnes.
No.
Yes. It's because you're like no one else. You're so good and so sweet-tempered. I always confide in you, whether I've fallen into trouble or fallen in love in earnest.
You've always been in earnest.
That was when I was a schoolboy. Times are changing. I suppose I'll be terribly in earnest one day. I wonder you're not in earnest yourself by this time.
I'm not in earnest, Trot.
I know. If you were, you'd have told me. But no one I know deserves to love you, Agnes. Someone more worthy altogether must appear before I give my consent.
Oh, Trot. There's something I want to ask you. There's no one else I can ask, but have you seen any alteration in Papa?
Well,
tell me what it is.
Can I be plain, Agnes, liking him so much?
Yes.
I think he does himself no good by...
Yes?
By the habit that has increased since I first came here. He's often very nervous. At least I fancy so.
It is not fancy.
His hand trembles. His speech isn't plain. And his eyes look wild. I've noticed...
Go on.
I've noticed that when he's least like himself, he's most certain to be wanted on business.
By Uriah.
Yes.
Yes.
Then the sense that he was unfit for it, or hasn't understood it, or simply that he's shown his condition, makes him so uneasy that the next day he's worse. And the next day worse again.
Oh.
Agnes, don't be distressed, but the other evening, I saw him crying like a child.
Hush. Father, here is Trotwood come to say goodbye.
Trotwood, my boy. Welcome. To say goodbye? Well, I'm sorry for it. But it is right that you should leave us. You're a schoolboy no longer. Now, will you come with us to Dr. Strong's? We're invited to take tea there. I know he'll welcome you.
I shan't see many new faces in Trotwood's stead, Wickfield. I'm getting lazy. I relinquish all my young people in 6 months and lead a quieter life.
You've been saying that for the last 10 years.
But now I mean to do it. Then I'll have nothing to think of but compiling my dictionary and looking after Annie.
Two congenial tasks. Tell me, have you any recent news of Mr. Jack Maldon?
Oh, yes.
Indeed, a post has just come from India.
Poor dear Jack. That trying climate, like living under a burning glass.
Is Mr. Maldon ill?
Ill? He's all sorts of things.
Except well.
Except well, indeed. He's had sunstroke, no doubt, and jungle fever and agues. And as to his liver, of course he gave that up altogether when he first went out.
Does he say all this?
Oh, you little know my poor Jack Maldon when you ask that. Oh, say, not he. You might drag him behind 4 wild horses first.
Oh, Mama.
Annie, my dear, you know quite well your cousin would be dragged behind any number of wild horses. I won't confine myself to 4, 8, 16, 2, and 30, rather than say anything to overturn the doctor's
plans. Wickfield's plans? Well, that is to say, our joint plans. I said myself, at home or abroad.
I was the means of sending him abroad. It's my responsibility.
Oh, my dear Mr. Wickfield, everything was done for the best, I know. But he can't live there, and I know he'll die there rather than overturn the doctor's plan.
Well, then, if he comes home on the grounds of ill health, we must find something for him in this country.
Oh, Doctor, how like your generous self. Annie? Why do you not thank the doctor for his kindness to your old playfellow?
What did Mr. Maldon himself say?
Why, he said in his letter to the doctor that his health was suffering, but Annie's letter was plainer still.
Mama.
Show me that letter again, Annie.
Not now, Mama.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, my dear. Do you know, we'd never have heard of that letter at all if I hadn't asked for it myself. Give it me at once.
Very well.
Thank you. Now, let's see. The remembrance of old times, my dearest Annie.
Mama.
No, it's not there. Ah, you may not be surprised to learn, Annie, that I've undergone so much in this place that I've decided to leave it at all costs, on sick leave if I can, on resignation if that is necessary. What I'm enduring here is insupportable. Poor boy! But for the doctor's kindness, it would be insupportable to me to think of it. Annie, my dear, take your letter back. There. Now, I'm sure we'd all like to hear one of your charming duets with Miss Wickfield. Their voices blend so well, Mr. Copperfield.
Indeed, but the hour is late and Mr. Copperfield is perhaps pressed for time. Agnes, it's time for us to leave.
Yes, Papa. Annie, dear, goodbye.
You're wrapped, my dear.
Agnes had been about to kiss her friend goodnight, but her father stepped between them, as if by accident, and drew her away. For the first time, I noticed that he appeared to dislike the friendship between the two young women, and it seemed to me that I had left the doctor's house with a dark cloud hanging over it, the impending shadow of a great affliction that had no distinct form as yet. The next day, I took coach for London and put up at the Golden Cross Inn.
Well, now, what would you like for dinner? Young gentleman generally likes poultry. Have a fowl.
I don't think I want a fowl.
Well, young gentleman is generally tired of beef or mutton. Have a veal cutlet.
I don't think I... Very well.
Do you care for taters? Young gentleman generally has been overdosed with taters.
I will have a veal cutlet and potatoes, thank you. And whatever goes with it.
What'll you take to drink?
Half a pint of sherry.
This bold request may have been unwise, for while reading my newspaper, I spied the waiter busily pouring a number of small decanters into one, like a chemist making up a prescription. I spent the evening at the theatre. It was Julius Caesar. And back at the hotel, I ordered porter and oysters and sat for a while by the coffee room fire. Someone else had come in, and when I rose to go to bed, I saw him plainly. A handsome young man, dressed with a tasteful, easy negligence that was so familiar to me.
Why, Steadwolf! Won't you speak to me? Oh, you don't remember me, I'm afraid.
My God, it's little Copperfield.
I never was so glad. My dear Steerforth, I'm overjoyed to see you.
I'm rejoiced to see you too. Why, Copperfield, don't be so overpowered. How'd you come to be here?
I came by the Canterbury coach today. I've been adopted by an aunt down in that part of the country, and I've just finished my education there. How do you come to be here?
Well, I'm what they call an Oxford man. That's to say I get bored to death there periodically. And now I'm on my way to my mother's. You're a devilish amiable-looking fellow, Copperfield. Just what you used to be now I look at you.
I knew you at once. But you're more easily remembered.
You're not altered in the least. Yes, I'm on an expedition of duty. My mother lives a little way out of town, so I stayed here tonight instead of going on. I've only been in town half a dozen hours, and those I've spent dozing at the play.
I've been at the play, too. Covent Garden. What a magnificent entertainment, Steerforth.
My dear young Davy, you're a very daisy. The daisies of the field at sunrise are no fresher than you are. I was at Covent Garden, too, and there never was a more miserable business.
Hello, you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Where have you put my friend Copperfield?
Sir, Mr. Copperfield is at present in 44.
What the devil do you mean by putting Mr. Copperfield into a little loft over the stable?
Why, you see, we wasn't aware, sir, as Mr. Copperfield was anyways particular. We could give Mr. Copperfield 72, if that would be preferred, next you, sir.
Of course it would be preferred. Do it at once.
Yes, sir.
Good. You'll find 72 a great improvement. Why didn't you breakfast with me tomorrow morning? 10 o'clock?
Thank you, Steerforth. I should like that very much.
Well, Copperfield, as you're in no hurry today, come home with me to Highgate. You'll be pleased with my mother. She's a little vain and prosy about me, but that you can forgive her. And she'll be pleased with you.
I'd like to be as sure of that as you are.
Everyone who likes me has a claim on her.
Then I'll be a favourite.
Good. Come and prove it. We'll go and see the sights first, and then we'll travel by coach to Highgate.
Thank you. Steerforth?
Yes?
When did you take your degree?
I take a degree? Not I, my dear Daisy. You don't mind my calling you Daisy?
Not at all.
That's a good fellow. No, I haven't the least desire or intention to distinguish myself in that way. I've done enough for my purpose.
Oh.
I remember I thought you to pity Steerforth valued academic success so lightly. When we arrived that evening in Highgate, we received a stately welcome from Mrs. Steerforth, a handsome elderly lady, very like her son.
James, this is a happy surprise. We do not see you as often as we could wish.
Oxford makes her demands, Mother. I chanced on an old friend in London, a schoolfellow from my days at Salem House, David Copperfield. I made free with your hospitality by inviting him to stay here a day or so.
You are very welcome, Mr. Copperfield. This is Miss Dartle, my companion.
Good evening, Miss Dartle.
Mr. Copperfield.
Rosa has been part of our family for a long time. She's a kind of cousin.
You must play for us after dinner, Rosa.
I haven't played for you for many years, James.
More's the pity. She plays like an angel, Copperfield. The harp, of course.
But Miss Dartle did not look very like an angel. She was about 30 years of age, with eager black eyes. But the most remarkable feature of her appearance was a scar upon her lip. An old scar, healed years ago, which had once cut right through her mouth, but was now barely visible, except on her upper lip, the shape of which it had altered. At dinner she spoke little to me, but asked a good many questions of Steerforth and his mother.
Thank you, Littimer. I'm very glad you found time to visit your quiet home, James. I'm afraid you lead but a wild life in college.
Oh, really? You know how ignorant I am. I only ask for information. But isn't it always so? I thought that kind of life was understood to be. Eh?
It is education for a very grave profession, Rosa.
Yes, that's very true. But isn't it, though? I want to be put right if I'm wrong. Isn't it, really?
Really what?
Oh, you mean it's not? Well, I'm very glad to hear it. That's the advantage of asking. I'll never again allow people to talk before me of wastefulness and profligacy in connection with that life.
And you'll be right. My son's tutor is a conscientious gentleman, and even if I hadn't implicit reliance on my son, I should have reliance on him.
Should you? Dear me. Conscientious, is he? Really conscientious?
I'm convinced of it.
How very nice. What a comfort. Really conscientious. Then he's not... Oh, but of course he can't be if he's really conscientious.
You need have no doubts about that, Rosa. Mr. Copperfield, my son tells me you intend to go down to Suffolk when you leave us.
Yes, ma'am. I'd be very glad if I could persuade you to come with me, Steerforth. I'm going down to see my old nurse and her family.
Didn't I meet some of them when we were at school?
Yes. You met Mr. Peggotty, her brother. He's a boatman.
Of course. That bluff fellow. He had a son with him, hadn't he?
No. That was his nephew. Although Mr. Peggotty adopted him as a son. He has a very pretty little niece, too. And she's his adopted daughter. His house, well, his boat, rather, for he lives in a boat on dry land, is full of people who owe a debt to his generosity. You'd be delighted to see that household.
Should I? Yes, I think I should. Apart from the pleasure of a journey with you, it will be worth it to see that sort of people together.
Oh, but really? Do tell me, are they, though?
Are they what, Rosa? And are who what?
That sort of people. Are they really animals and clods and beings of another order? I want to know so much.
There's a pretty wide separation between them and us. They're not expected to be as sensitive as we are. Their delicacy isn't shocked or hurt easily. They're wonderfully virtuous, I dare say. Some people do contend that. But they haven't very fine natures. And they may be thankful that, like their coarse, rough skins, they're not easily wounded.
Really? Well, I don't know when I've been better pleased. That's so consoling. It's such a delight to know that when they suffer, they don't feel. Sometimes I've been quite uneasy for that sort of people, but now I'll just dismiss the idea of them altogether. Live and learn. I didn't know, and now I do know. And that shows the advantage of asking, don't it?
I supposed Steerforth had said what he did in jest, in order to draw Miss Dartle out. When the ladies retired to the drawing-room, and we two were sitting before the fire, I half expected him to say so. But I was disappointed.
Cigar, Daisy?
No. No, thank you, Steerforth.
What? No vices yet? Of course not. I should have guessed as much. So, now you've met my family. What did you think of Rosa Dartle?
She's very clever, isn't she? And she does play like an angel.
Clever? But an angel? No. She brings everything to a grindstone and sharpens it. She's worn herself away by constant sharpening. She's all edge.
That's a remarkable scar on her lip.
Why, the fact is, I did that.
An accident?
No. I was a young boy, and she exasperated me, and I threw a hammer at her.
Oh!
A promising young angel I must have been.
I'm sorry,
She's borne the mark ever since, and she'll bear it to her grave. If she ever rests in one. I can't believe she'll ever rest anywhere. She's an orphan, daughter of my father's cousin. She has a couple of thousand a year of her own. That's her history for you.
And I've no doubt she loves you like a brother.
Some brothers aren't loved over much. Help yourself to port, Copperfield. Before we join the ladies, we'll drink to the daisies of the field in compliment to you, and to the lilies of the valley that toil not, neither do they spin, in compliment to me. The more shame to me.
It was not your throw, James.
Rosa, I've caught you out. You've not been paying...
My son tells me that it was at Mr. Creakle's school that you first got acquainted, Mr. Copperfield.
He was very generous and noble to me in those days, Mom. And I stood in need of such a friend.
He is always generous and noble.
Indeed he is.
It was not a fit school, generally, for my son. But there were particular circumstances. My son's high spirit made it desirable he should be placed with some man who felt its superiority and would be content to bow before it. We find such a man there. James was the monarch of the place, and he determined to be worthy of his station. It was like him.
Yes, it was like him.
So my son took, of his own will, to the course in which he can always, when he pleases, outstrip every competitor. My son tells me, Mr. Copperfield, that you were devoted to him, and that when you met yesterday, you wept tears of joy.
Yes, I did.
I should be affected if I pretended to be surprised that James should inspire such emotion. But I can't be indifferent to anyone who appreciates his merit so much. I'm very glad to see you here. I can assure you he feels great friendship for you. You can rely on his protection.
Very well, Rosa. I accept your surrender. Daisy, I think I will come down to the country with you. In about a week, perhaps? You can stay here a week.
Please do, Mr. Copperfield.
Thank you very much. Of course I should like to do that.
Mr. Copperfield, James calls you Daisy. Is it a nickname? Why does he give it to you? Is it... I'm so stupid in these things. Is it because he thinks you young and innocent?
I believe it is.
Oh, I'm glad to know that. I ask for information and I'm glad to know it. He thinks you young and innocent, and so you are his friend. Well, that's quite delightful.
When I went to my room that night, I saw there was a portrait of Miss Dartle looking at me from above the chimney piece. To get rid of her, I undressed quickly, put out the light and went to bed. But I couldn't forget she was still there, looking at me. Steerforth had a manservant called Littimer. He was taciturn, soft-footed and quiet, but above all, he was respectable. He was in my room every morning before I was up to bring me the shaving water I was ashamed of not yet needing and to put out my clothes. He made me feel deplorably young. Come in.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Littimer.
Your shaving water, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Steerforth will be glad to hear how you have rested.
Thank you, very well indeed. Is Mr. Steerforth quite well?
Oh, thank you. Mr. Steerforth is tolerably well. Is there anything more I can have the honor of doing for you, sir?
Nothing. Thank you.
I thank you, sir, if you please.
Every morning we held exactly this conversation. And every morning, in the presence of this man, I became, as it were, a boy again. A delightful week passed by, and then, as planned, I travelled with Steerforth to Yarmouth. We arrived late and put up at the inn. Next morning, Steerforth was in great spirits. He had been strolling about the beach before I was up and made the acquaintance of half the boatmen in the place.
And what's more, I've seen your Mr. Pegasus house. That is, I'm sure I have. A boat? On the beach?
Yes.
With smoke coming out of the chimney?
That's the one.
I was tempted to walk in on them and swear I was you, grown out of all knowledge. When did you propose to introduce me there, Daisy?
I thought this evening, when they're all sitting around the fire.
Very well, this evening.
I won't give them notice we're here. Let's take them by surprise.
Of course. Let's see the natives in their aboriginal condition.
Though they are that sort of people.
That sort of... Of course. You remember my passage at arms with Rosa, confound her. I'm half afraid of that girl. Let's not talk about her. Now, tell me, what are you going to do?
Well, I must see Peggotty, first of all.
Suppose I deliver you up to be cried over for a couple of hours. Is that long enough?
Yes. But you must come too. I've talked so much about you. Do you want to meet you?
I'll come anywhere you like. Let's meet in 2 hours' time. I'd like to look at the town first.
Back? You'll never guess who this is.
Aye. Oh, good evening, sir.
Don't you know me, Mr. Barkis? You knew me well enough once.
Who was it brought us together, Barkis, my dear?
What, sir? Oh, you're never...
David Copperfield. Yes. Give me your hand, Mr. Barkis.
Oh. Well, I'm afraid I can't do that. No power in thy hands, you see.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that.
I'll tell you what. You can take the task from a nightcap instead.
Very well.
Oh, thanks, sir. That's as good as shaking hands. Prop me up, Clara.
Oh.
That's right. Well, I never. I feel as if I were driving you on the old Blanderston Road again. That's done me good to see you. So it has. Oh. What name was it as I rode up on the car, sir?
Oh, Mr. Barkis, we had some grave talks about that, didn't we?
Always willing. A long time, sir.
A long time.
And I don't regret it.
Oh, Barkis, my dear.
Do you remember what you told me once? About her making all the apple pasties and doing all the cooking.
Yes, very well.
That were as true as turnips is, as true as taxes is, and nothing's truer than that. Oh. A man as poor as I am finds that out when he's laid up. I'm a very poor man, sir.
I'm sorry to hear it.
Very poor man. Do you see a box under the bed?
Yes, I do.
That's only old clothes.
Oh.
I wish that were money, sir.
I wish it was indeed.
But that ain't.
No.
She's the best of women, C.P. Barkis is. My dear?
Yes?
You'll get that dinner ready for company, won't you?
Please don't trouble.
Yes, you will. Won't you, my dear?
Of course I will, Davy.
I've got a trifle of money about me somewhere. But I'm a little tired. If you and Mr. David will leave me for a short nap. I'll try and find it when I wake.
All right, my dear. Come and mass, Davy. That's his way, Davy. He's got a little nearer than he used to be. And he won't let anybody see where he keeps his money. It hurt him so to get that, but he will do it.
Where is the money, then?
In that there box under the bed. Who's that now at the door?
I think it may be my friend, Mr. Steerforth.
Not him as was at school with you.
The very same. I happened to meet him in London.
Well, you'd better let him in, Davy.
It is him.
Well, Daisy.
Steerforth, this is my old nurse.
Good evening, Peggotty. I beg your pardon. I should say Mrs. Barkis.
You say whatever you like, sir. Come you in. Come you in.
Master David talked so much about you. You look exactly the way he said you did.
And how was that? Or perhaps I'd better not ask.
Don't ask him, Peggy. It might make him too vain.
Will you state the supper, sir? We take it very kindly, Barkis and I. He's upstairs with the rheumatics, but I know
that... Then, of course, I mustn't stay.
Oh, but Master Davy's staying. That'll please us both, sir.
She means it, Steerforth.
Well, in that case...
Thank you, sir. Your old room's ready for you, Master Davy.
Oh, but I...
I told you once. If you went to China and came back, you'd always know as it was ready.
But, Peggotty... I've come here with Mr. Steerforth and...
You must stay here. Of course you must. I'll sleep at the inn.
It seems unfriendly to bring you so far and then separate.
Daisy, where do you really belong? Of course you must stay.
And very soon, Steerforth had worked his usual magic, brightening and refreshing the house and the sick room like light and air. By the time we left the house, I do believe Peggotty had a kind of adoration for him. When we had said goodbye to her and set out for the beach, the wind was blowing and the sea was high.
This is a wild kind of place, isn't it?
Dismal enough. The sea roars as if it were hungry for us. Is that the boat ahead? That light?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Odd. I came straight to it. By instinct, I suppose.
I can hear them. Stay close to the window, Steerforth. We'll surprise them.
Yes, Uncle. This is to be my little boy.
Emily, is this true?
That is true, Uncle. If you please.
If I please, and if I could be anything else.
Oh, well, I'm steadier now, and I thought better of it. And I'll be as good a little wife as I can to him, for he's a dear, good fellow.
There, come bless you.
Bless you, but...
Master Davy! That's Master Davy!
Soldiers! Emily, look, it's Master Davy! Bless me, sir. Aren't you Mr. Steerforth?
The very same.
Oh, well, welcome to you both. Welcome.
And is this little Emily?
Well, Davy, I'm pleased indeed to see you. Boy,
that you two gentlemen growed, should come to this here room tonight of all nights. Is such a thing as never happened before. Emily, my darling, that's Master Davy's friend. That is the gentleman as you heard on. He comes to see you on the brightest night of your uncle's life.
Oh, Uncle, please, hush, hush now.
Oh, she's afeard. She know what I'm going to tell. Look after Mrs. Gummidge for a minute.
Yes, Colonel. Come you along, Emily. Come you along with me.
Oh, well, if this ain't the brightest night of my life, I'm a shellfish. Boiled too, and more I can't say. This little Emily of ours, well, she ain't my child, sir. I never had one, but I couldn't love her more. You understand?
I quite understand.
Well, I know as you do, sir. Thank you. Master Davy can remember what she was.
Indeed, I can.
You may judge for your own self what she is, but neither of you can't know what she has been and will be to my loving heart.
Perhaps I can guess at it a little, Mr. Peggotty.
Oh, indeed, sir. Now, you sees my nephew, Am, as you met, sir, years ago.
I remember.
Now what? Do this here blessed tarpaulin go and do, but he loses that there art of his to our little Emily.
As any man would.
Well, I counselled him to speak to her, but he's too bashful, big as he is, so I speaks for him. What? Him? Says Emily. Him that I've knowed all my life and liked so much? Oh, Uncle, I can never have him. So I tells him that, much as I'd like it to be, it warn't to be, and it warn't, till, all of a sudden, tonight, they creep in together, hand in hand, and Am cries out to me, joyful, that little Emily has said yes!
Am, you are a fortunate man.
Oh, I knows that, Master Davy.
Congratulations, Am.
Thanks, sir. I see her grow up, Jan. Like a flower. I lie down my life for her. The hint of gentlemen in all the land, now yet sailing on the sea, that can love his lady more than I love her.
Mr. Peggotty, you're a thoroughly good fellow and deserve to be as happy as you are tonight. Ham, I give you joy, my boy. And I have a bottle of Hollands here. We can drink your health. Daisy, stir the fire and make it a brisk one. And Mr. Peggotty, unless you can induce your gentle niece to come back, I shall go.
Right.
I wouldn't make such a gap at your fireside for all the wealth of the Indies.
Mother, come you back in here with that lamb lady.
Come along, Amley.
Hello, my dear.
You sit here, Amley. Sit here, my pretty. Say, Master David's bought his friend to meet us all. Him as you heard so much on.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Miss Emily. I know I'm a stranger, but will you let me wish you happiness? I've heard so much of you from David, I feel I know you well. I met your uncle and Ham years ago, you know, while I was still at school.
Oh, I know. They often speak of you.
I see now all David said was true. And I drink your health tonight.
Oh, I thank you, sir.
And I wish you joy.
Steerforth brought Emily and all of us into a charmed circle, and it became the happiest of evenings. He told us a merry adventure with so much gaiety that Emily laughed until the boat rang with a musical sound.
Bless us, sir. I'm sure that could never be.
I swear it, Emily. It's as true as I'm here beside you.
Oh, that's a tale now.
Come, Mr. Peggotty. I'll warrant you know a good shant.
Oh, aye, stormy winds will blow.
Stormy winds.
Ah, well now. Oh, the stormy winds did blow, and the raging seas did roar, and we jolly sailor boys were up and up the loft, and the landlord's lying down below, and the landlord was lying down below.
And now, young lady, what will you sing?
Oh, bless you, sir. She won't for the life of her.
Do you know Early One Morning? Oh. It's a pretty air.
Aye, that I do, sir.
Come on, my dear.
Early one morning, just as the sun was rising, I heard a maiden sing in the valley below. Oh, don't deceive me. Oh, never leave me. How could you lose a poor maiden so?
It was almost midnight when we took our leave. We parted merrily, and they all stood crowded round the door to light us as far as they could upon our road.
Good night, Master Davy. Good night, Tom.
Good night.
Good night.
Go careful now. It is very dark.
Goodbye.
A most engaging little beauty. Well, it's a quaint place and a quaint company. It's a new sensation to mix with them.
Wasn't it fortunate that we arrived tonight, of all nights? I never saw people so happy.
That's rather a chuckle-headed fellow for the girl, isn't he?
What?
A rough diamond would sound better, perhaps.
Steerforth, when I see how well you understand these friends of mine, how you enter into their happiness as you did tonight, how you feel for them in their troubles, well, it makes me love you 20 times more.
Daisy, I believe you're in earnest and are good. I wish we all were. Come on, it's late. And we jolly sailor boys were up aloft, and the landlubbers lying down below. And the landlubbers lying down below.
We stopped in Yarmouth more than a fortnight. Some of the time we were separated. Steerforth was a good sailor, and I was not. So when he went out in the boat with Mr. Peggotty, I usually stayed ashore. On our last day, I paid a visit to Blunderstone to see our old house. I came back by ferry late in the evening. There was a light in Mr. Peggotty's boat, so I called in. I was surprised to find Steerforth there alone, sitting by the fire.
Steerforth?
What? Daisy, you come upon me like a reproachful ghost.
Have I called you down from the stars?
No. I was looking at the pictures in the fire.
Don't disturb them. You're spoiling them for me.
Ah, but you wouldn't have seen them. I detest this mongrel time, neither day nor night. David, I wish to God I'd had a wise father these last 20 years.
Steerforth, what's the matter?
I wish with all my soul I'd been better guided. I wish with all my soul I could guide myself better. I've been in torment for the last hour.
Tell me what's happened. Let me help.
It's nothing. I'm bad company for myself sometimes. What old women call the horrors have been creeping over me. I've been afraid of myself.
You're afraid of nothing else?
Perhaps not. And yet that may be enough, too.
Oh, evening, sir. Evening, Master David.
Why, Mrs. Gummidge? I thought some enchanter had come here and spirited everyone away.
Where is everyone? Oh, down the south fishing still. I'm and Emily aren't home from work, and I've been to the market for the supper. There's plenty for all, young gentlemen. Would you stay?
No, thank you, Mrs. Gummidge. Mr. Steerforth and I are dining at the hotel tonight.
Give me a kiss, Mrs. Gummidge, and tell me I'm forgiven for taking him away.
Oh, sir.
Good night.
Oh, good night, gentlemen both.
Good night, Mrs. Gummidge.
So, we abandon this buccaneer life tomorrow, do we?
Yes. Our places on the coach are taken.
Aye. There's no help for it, I suppose. You know, I've bought a boat down here.
What? You are an extraordinary fellow. Why, you may never come near Yarmouth again.
I don't know about that. I've taken a fancy to the place. I've bought a clipper, and Mr. Peggotty will be master of it in my absence.
Ah, now I understand. You've really done it for him. How generous you are.
Oh, nonsense. The least said, the better. She must be newly rigged, so I'll leave Littimer behind to see to it. Did I tell you he'd come down?
No.
Oh, yes. He's the same as ever. Distant and quiet as the North Pole. He came down with a letter from my mother. He shall see to the boat being renamed. She's the Stormy Petrel now. What does Mr. Peggotty care for Stormy Petrel? I'll have her rechristened.
By what name?
The Little Emily, I think. Look, isn't that our own little Emily? And her true knight with her as all.
They haven't seen us. Emily!
No, let them be.
What is that?
Following them.
It's a woman. I don't know her.
It's an ill-omened black shadow, whatever it may be.
A poor lost soul by the look of her. Perhaps she means to beg from them.
Perhaps. A beggar would be no novelty. But it's a strange thing the beggar should take that form tonight.
Why?
Because I was thinking of something like it when it appeared. It's gone now. And all ill go with it. And now, for dinner. Before you go back to the care of your nurse.
We had dinner together, and then I left him and went back to Peggotty and my own little room. The quiet street was empty, or nearly so. A solitary man was walking up and down before the house. I was surprised to see that it was Ham.
Oh, good evening, Master Davy.
Ham, why are you waiting here?
Well, sir, you see, Ham is talking to someone in there.
Then why aren't you in there too?
Oh, in a general way, I would be, but that's a young woman. young woman as Emily knowed once, and did not know no more.
Who is she?
Our poor soul is his trod underfoot by all the town. The mould in the churchyard don't hold any that the folks shrink away from more.
I think I saw her early this evening, following you.
Following me? Where?
On the beach. You were with Emily, and there was this figure. You didn't see us, so we did not disturb you.
Ah, that's right, you did say her then. Not that I knew she was there, but she crept under Emily's window soon afterwards and caught her.
Who is she?
Martha Arundel. 2 or 3 years older than Emily, but she was at the school with her and worked at Homer's too. She caught her. Emily, for Christ's sake, have a woman's heart towards me. I was once like you. Those were solemn words to hear, Master Davy.
They were indeed. What did Emily do?
Oh, Emily couldn't speak to her then. For her loving uncle was come home. And kind-hearted as he is, he couldn't see them two together for all the treasure of the sea.
I see. No, I'm sure that's true.
So, Emily write on a bit of paper and give it to Martha out the window to bring here, to show her aunt. Then she tell me and ask me to bring her here.
I see.
Oh, Master Davy, what can we do? She don't ought to know any such. I can't deny her when the tears are on her face. Ah, it's her little purse. She gave it to me, such as a tie as it is, to look after. I know why she's by it.
Come you in, Lalhan. Oh, Master Davy.
I'll go away.
No. Do you come in too?
Well, Emily?
Martha, I want to go to London.
Why to London?
Better there than here. No one know me there. Everyone know me here.
What will she do there?
She'll try to do well. You don't know what she said to us, do we, Aunt?
No, indeed.
Oh, try. If you'll help me away. I never can do worse than what I've done here. I may do better. Oh, take me out of these here streets where the whole town know me from a child.
Ham, have you got my purse?
That's my lovely.
But this is your money.
That's all yarn, Emily. I don't know in all the world that aren't yarn, my dear. There ain't a no delight to me. It's that for you.
Martha, is this enough?
Oh, more than enough. More than enough. God bless you. God bless you.
Oh, Ham.
Oh, don't, Emily. You don't ought to cry so.
Oh, Ham, I'm not so good a girl as I ought to be. I know I have not the thankful heart I ought to have.
Oh, you have. I'm sure.
No. I'm not as good a girl as I ought to be. Not near.
No.
I try your love too much. I'm often cross and changeable to you. You're never so to me.
Oh, no.
I should think of nothing but how to make you happy.
You always do. I'm happy in the sight of you. In the thought of you.
Oh, no, but that's not enough. Just because you're good, not because I am. Oh, my dear, it might have been better for you if you'd been fond of someone else, of someone worthier than me.
Oh, poor little soft heart. Martha's overset her altogether.
Try to help me. Ham, dear, try to help me. I want to be a better girl than I am. I want to feel more what a blessed thing it is to be the wife of a good man and to lead a peaceful life.
Oh, hush, my dear. Hush.
Oh, Ham.
dear. Bless you.
All our friends took leave of us the following morning and seemed very sorry to see us go.
Goodbye, my precious.
Goodbye, Peggotty.
Bye, Mr. Dearborn, sir.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Why is Littimer staying?
Well, he has some business of mine to attend to, and he'll stay until he's done it. Now, you said you had something you wanted to ask me once we were alone. What was it?
I had a letter this morning from my aunt. She asks if I'd like to be a proctor. I'm afraid to confess that I don't even know what a proctor is.
A proctor is a sort of monkish attorney. He is in Doctors' Commons what solicitors are to courts of law.
Are proctors and advocates the same thing?
No, the proctors employ the advocates and both get very comfortable fees. So, I advise you to take kindly to Doctors' Commons, Daisy. When will you see your aunt?
When I get to London. She's staying in Lincoln's Inn Fields.
Trotwood. My dear Trotwood. I'm sure if your poor mother had been alive, the silly little creature would have shed tears.
Dear Aunt Betsy, I've missed you.
Oh.
What have you done with Mr. Dick? Is he in London too?
No. I've left him behind, and I'm sorry for it.
Why?
Because I'm convinced Mr. Dick's character is not a character to keep the donkeys off. I brought Janet up with me and left him behind, and I should have done it the other way round. This afternoon at 4 o'clock, a cold feeling came over me from head to foot. If ever there was a donkey on my green, there was one then.
I'm sure there was.
No, it was a donkey. It was the one with the stumpy tail that murdering sister of a woman rode. If there's any donkey in the world whose impudence I find harder to bear than the others, it's that donkey. But it's too late to worry. Trot, what do you think of the Proctor plan?
I like it, Aunt. I like it very much.
That's cheering.
There's only one difficulty.
What is it?
How much will it cost?
Oh, to article you? Just £1,000.
That's a large sum of money. Oh. You've spent a lot on my education, and you've always been very generous. Surely there are some ways I can begin in life with less outlay. Are you certain you can afford this?
Trot, my child. If I have any object in life, it's to provide for your being a good, sensible, happy man. Perhaps I might have been better friends with your poor father, or even with that poor child, your mother, after your sister Betsy Trotwood disappointed me. When you came to me, a little runaway boy, all dusty and wayworn, perhaps I thought so too. From that time till now, you've always been a credit to me and a pride and a pleasure.
Aunt Betsy, I wish I deserved that.
You do, Trot. You do. I have no other claim on my means. At least I... No, I have no other claim on my means. And you are my adopted child. Only be a loving child to me in my age, and bear with my whims and fancies, and you will do more for an old woman whose prime of life wasn't so happy as it might have been than that old woman ever did for you.
Next day, we set out for the office of Messrs. Spenlow and Jawkins in Doctors' Commons. My aunt was of the general opinion that every man she saw in London was a pickpocket, so she gave me her purse to carry, which had 10 guineas in it and some silver. We were on Ludgate Hill when my aunt suddenly quickened her step and looked frightened. I saw that an ill-dressed man who had stared at us in passing was now following us closely.
Trot, my dear Trot, I don't know what to do.
Is it that man? It is, isn't it? There's nothing to be afraid of. Go into a shop and I'll get rid of him.
No, don't speak to him. I order you.
Good heavens! He's only a sturdy beggar.
You don't know what he is. You don't know who he is. Don't look at him. Get me a coach and wait for me in St. Paul's Churchyard. Quickly now. And my purse, if you please.
May I not come with you?
No. I must go alone. I must go with him.
With him? That fellow?
Yes, I must. Get me a coach, Trotwood, please.
Coachman!
Get in. Coachman, drive anywhere. Drive straight on.
Oh. I waited in the churchyard for half an hour before I saw the coach coming back. The driver stopped beside me, and I saw my aunt was now alone.
Aunt Betsy, are you all right?
Yes, yes, get in, Trot.
Has he gone?
Yes. My dear child, I want you to promise me something.
Of course. Anything.
Promise me that you will never ask me who he was.
Oh, but
never ask me who he was. Never refer to it again.
But when Aunt Betsy gave me her purse to pay the driver, I saw that only the silver remained. All the guineas were gone.
David Copperfield from a novel by Charles Dickens. It starred Gary Cady, Miriam Margolyes, David Bamber, Maggie McCarthy, Joanna Myers, and David Burke. Mary Wimbush, Andrew Wincott, Irene Sutcliffe, Jenny Howe, Jane Wittenshaw, Timothy Bateson, and Timothy Spall. With Terence Edmund, Peter Tubnham, Adjoa Ando, James Green, Alice Arnold, Norman Jones, Anne Windsor, Eric Allen, and Peter Penry-Jones. The book was dramatized by Betty Davis, and the producer was Marilyn Imrie.